This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missspots.com/prime. right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Nikki Bella to my Brie Bella. Here's Kevin.
Nikki and Brie Bella. I just don't have anything to say.
That's our show, folks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us after a week off. Yeah, I have some serious things to talk about this with the whole women's revolution and shoehorning Nikki and Brie Bella into it. It just drives me absolutely up a wall.
Yeah.
Like, Nikki and Brie Bella are the reason why the women's revolution had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, they were the problem, and Nikki became, in her own right, a pretty good wrestler. Brie did not, and the fact that they're throwing them back in there and acting like they're, you know, the godmothers of the women's revolution is just insulting. It pisses me off.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and I believe we've talked about this for ad nauseum. And this is WWE retconning 101. Something that they're in the business of doing and have been for a number of years as well. Well, we'll get into all of that here. We are back after a week off. Thank you, everyone, for allowing us to do as such and coming back and listening to us. We were going to do it without your permission, but...
Yeah, I mean, getting back in the swing... This is an antiquing podcast, right?
Oh... We shouldn't be talking about wrestling. Okay.
It's mostly about like Hummel figurines. I just can't remember. I know we're a little bit out of practice right now.
So I have some 1980s Hess trucks.
I have no idea what that means.
You don't know what a Hess truck is?
No.
Oh. We'll talk about that off air.
Okay, wonderful.
I really feel like every kid of our generation had them. And by our generation, you know, mid-30s.
But I feel like, now I feel like you're judging me, so I think we should move on to Raw.
I am, but yes, let's move on to Raw.
The opening segment here was really to try to drive home the point that Braun Strowman is a bad guy, because what we did miss in not breaking down Raw and SmackDown the previous week is that Braun Strowman turned heel and aligned himself with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. It's kind of tough because if you just look at the narrative and the way Braun Strowman even laid it out on Raw, he's kind of fighting fire with fire. Roman Reigns has the Shield to back him up, Dean and Seth, so he got two guys to back him up because Roman had to be saved from a cash-in by his buddies. So in that narrative, no one's really a good guy or a bad guy here. They're kind of, you know, it's more like shades of gray. But then Braun Strowman throws in, "And I don't care what any of you people think." That's exactly what a heel says. So we know that they're going with the heel narrative for him, but they're really not doing a good job of it. It's almost like they have one foot in the water and one foot out. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to be like, you know, I wanted to do the right thing and tell the person when I'm going to cash in on them. An admirable thing. No one in the history of this, except for Rob Van Dam, has done as such. So how is that a bad thing? And then, yeah, getting jumped by his buddies and trying to just equal things out, it's not really a bad thing. And then the pretty much cookie cutter heel shtick thereafter, I think they're going to have a hard time with this.
I think it's more interesting if they play a little shades of gray here, especially since Braun is a more popular character than Roman Reigns, but they certainly did not. I don't think they're being clever here. I think they're just not being smart. And I think those are two very different things. This entire segment was ending in a pull-apart brawl, what I would call a tepid pull-apart brawl. To the credit, the crowd was behind this, chanting, "Let them fight." But man, we've had a lot of pull-apart brawls. We were just talking about this 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Too many pull-apart brawls. It's really illogical.
Two a year. That's all you should get.
Two a year in very, very important programs. And we ended up with the Shield being arrested. And this is a tough storyline to pull off, in my opinion, with this. We've seen Stone Cold Steve Austin arrested. We've seen this many times and probably better. That's the issue here. This was just not done really all that well and something we've seen before. So it kind of gets it down, in my opinion.
Yeah. It doesn't intrigue me. Like you said, we've seen this back many years ago and whatever. I'm still going to pay attention to what's going on with it because there's many guys involved in this whole thing that I really enjoy. But this whole get arrested thing is, I wouldn't even say tried and true. Like, tried and true is something that you know you're always going to get great results from. And I just feel like you're not going to always get results from this. We know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It wasn't great. And overall, they're trying. They're trying to make Braun the big bad guy. They're aligning him with Dolph and Drew, who have been getting consistent heel heat. But it's a tough pill for a lot of people to swallow. Mm-hmm. And I think they knew that going in, but they're doing their damnedest. The Riot Squad took on the reason we needed a women's revolution, right? Nikki and Brie Bella. Man, whoever was the road agent, excuse me, that worked with Brie Bella to do not one, but two dives to the outside, they should be fired. Because she cannot do that. The first time she tried a dive, it was supposed to be like cut off by Sarah Logan with like a forearm or something. And whether Sarah was late or Brie was early, who knows, but it was really sloppy and looked terrible. And then the actual dive to the outside, she came up way short and almost broke her neck. Brie Bella is not athletic and she's not very good at wrestling. They should not be having her do anything that requires hand-eye coordination. It was bad. Corey Graves and Michael Cole were trying to counter this by talking about ring rust. We are talking about Brie Bella not being very good ever. Nikki actually looked okay, you know, because Nikki's a pretty good professional wrestler. But this is that whole narrative of them being, you know, special and them being the founders of the women's revolution. And it's just, once again, it's insulting to me. It pisses me off. It spits in the face of people like Paige and Bayley and Emma and Natty and the real workhorses that are the reason why women's wrestling is where it is now. they're just some people that had a reality TV show. That's what I think about the Bellas. And it's I know that they're doing this because of the women's only pay-per-view, but that retconning history just, it always rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, for sure. And going back to the dives, ooh, the first one especially was rough. Like, I would put that up there with that. Do you remember the spot where Enzo missed falling to the outside and then just did it again?
Yeah.
Oh, God, was that rough to see.
Brie Bella has all the grace of a dying pigeon. That's what that is. So we are going to get, we have them interacting with Ronda Rousey later on in the night, which I found extremely uninteresting. But, you know, the crowd loves them. They get a pop, and I have to just say, this is just not for me. So maybe the rest of the crowd loves this, but I am not a fan. There is something that I'm not sure if I'm a fan of, and that's Chad Gable and Bob Roode. What?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike. Talk about this. What do you think about these two guys teaming up? Doesn't this seem like banana pants to you?
I'm wondering if this is just to start a singles feud between the two of them. That like Roode gets jealous of Gable's his technical skill, and that he is running the tag team, and then just gets pissed at Gable and turns on him. That's the only thing that I can think, because creating a tag team out of these two guys just does sound banana pants.
It definitely is, and I love that idea, by the way. Bob Roode needs to be a heel. That's his best character. And Gable is a fiery babyface, and that's what this match was all about. It was like selling Chad Gable as a ball of fire. I mean, he threw suplexes like crazy. And to the credit, they didn't just run over the Ascension. Ascension actually looked pretty good. Especially Connor had some pretty impressive moves in here. It was not a squash, but Gable was the one that won this match. And listen, both of them were showing crazy babyface fire. The crowd was lukewarm at best on this, but you know, maybe they're building to something good. And listen, Gable and Roode, that's a program I want to see. I think it's a good way to get something started between guys that have nothing going on. Could they have set it up better than just randomly forming a tag team? Probably. But
yeah, you could have had Gable going around trying to find a new tag team partner. Like, hey, you know what? I want to get back in the tag team game. You want to help? No, you want to? And then Bob Roode steps up and is like, yeah, I'll team with you, kiddo.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that's one of the things that they could have done. It's a little lazy to me, but hey, listen, I'd love to see a program between these two with the proper heel babyface alignment. So that, even though it's a bizarre pairing, it has a tepid up for me. Elias and Alexa Bliss in the ring together, both insulting Columbus, Ohio. I could watch that every night.
Just Columbus, Ohio? If they were doing another city, would it be not as watchable?
No, just Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Well, and that's not because I am a Michigan native, but just because I thought it was incredible. Elias does what he does so well. Alexa is she's just so good on a microphone. And I know we kind of reiterate that every couple weeks or every month or so, but she did a great job here. And there's a reason why Alexa Bliss is still around the championship when so many other women have, like, say, Naomi has been thrust in the championship picture and been recycled out of it. Alexa Bliss stays around the championship because of her well-rounded game. Not the best in the ring by a long shot, but as far as a character, as far as her presentation, and part of her and as far as her poise on the mic, I mean, really second to none in the women's division, and one of the best talkers on the roster. So I thought this was overall a really fun, well set up heel segment.
Yeah, and every once in a while we get the treat of having two performers, whether they be male or female, in a segment together where they both get to talk and they are so good at it, and it's just so fun to watch. You just sit back and enjoy. I feel like it's too far and few between anymore that we get to see segments like that. So maybe that's why they stick out so much now. But
and being actually entertaining, because yeah. So many of these are just not entertaining. And we'll talk about Bobby Lashley later on. there was a match that this was setting up, which was Natalya versus Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss won with some shenanigans, and this just was another post-match interaction with Ronda Rousey, where they beat her up and ran her off, and now Mickey James is back. So Alexa has this weird faction of Mickey James and Alicia Fox, which very bizarre to me.
Yes.
But it's still building to their feud. I didn't think this was necessarily a step forward. It seemed like a sidestep to me, but it wasn't necessarily bad either.
Yeah. I'm still looking to see where they go.
Yeah. Man, the Revival. The feud with the B team and the Revival has not set the world alight. Okay, it has not been the best feud in the world, but it's been a nice, well-booked feud. The Revival are the old-school heels that are going to beat you down, who are chasing the baby faces who keep lucking into victories. I wanted to see a conclusion of this. I'm a big Revival fan, wanted to see the Revival take the titles off the B-team, or I wanted the B-team to win cleanly and develop into a real dangerous tag team that doesn't luck into every one of their victories. We don't get that. We were supposed to have a title match between the B team and the Revival, but Dolph and Drew step in, beat up the Revival, get the tag team title match, and they hotshot the titles onto Dolph and Drew. Now, Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, these guys have done a hell of a job since being put together. Drew McIntyre in particular, this guy's got world champion written all over him. He's a guy we love to watch. But I have to feel like this is a disservice to the tag team division when you put these two guys in the tag team title picture. When you hotshot the titles onto them with no storyline, with no nothing, just to put those titles in a feud with the world champion.
Yeah.
Just to put the titles into a feud that don't need the titles at all to be successful.
Yeah. This just
This just shows that tag team wrestling is not important at all. And it reiterates it, and it's really, really a shame to me, as much as I like Dolph and Drew.
Yeah, now we got a six-person feud at the top of the card, essentially, four titles and a briefcase that guarantees a guy a shot at the top title. Not, like, that is way too many props that are needed for this feud.
Yeah.
You don't need, having the Intercontinental Champion already in this is a little bit of an overkill, but now you're going to make the tag team champions be involved in this? Why? Now you're more than pumping the brakes on the tag team division, a raw tag team division that is floundering, that you are breaking hard on the raw tag team division, because you're not going to have any of the actual tag teams competing for that title for at least a month, probably more.
Yeah, I hate that. There's some talented teams on Raw. They can be doing something interesting with it, and they decided to go this direction, and I just disagree. I think it's a shame.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I love seeing the titles on Drew and Dolph if they were in a actual tag team program with someone who is not involved in the main event program.
Yeah. It weakens the whole card, really.
Yeah.
Speaking of the tag team division and bizarre developments, Drake Maverick, the GM of 205 Live, is now the manager of AOP. Okay. I like the AOP getting a manager. We've just ridiculed them for how they've booked these guys and how they have not had a manager. but he comes to the ring dressed as them?
Yeah, why?
Is he like a baseball manager where he for some reason has to wear a uniform with the stirrups and all? That was really bizarre. And I think they need to stop that immediately. But secondly, Drake Maverick does not play a heel GM on 205 Live, correct?
No, he's right down the middle.
So what's happening here? How does this have any kind of continuity? Very, very bizarre. I think Corey Graves could have been a great manager for AOP. You could have had Paul Heyman if you really wanted to put the rocket boots on these guys. But very, very bizarre. I hope it'll go in a good direction. I hope they stop having him play dress-up with them. But they basically have them come out, cut a little promo, squash some jobbers. We're back to square one with AOP. They basically wrestled 50-50 with Titus Worldwide for 2 months. Now they're back to squashing jobbers. It almost seems like a reintroduction for them.
Oh, absolutely. I laughed so hard when I saw Drake in the... I mean, they're the Shield right now with Kurt Angle in.
Yes. Yeah, it was just very, very weird.
Drake wear his suits.
Have him wear literally anything but that. Him wear a tutu. It would make more sense. The next segment, I'm just so interested in how you're going to take this. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker in the ring. Fan baiting, nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, all talking about Triple H and Undertaker. Who gives a fuck? For a glorified house show. But it's Undertaker and Triple H, two legends. They have all this hubbub about Steve Austin and all these legends. Like, who's going to win? Who's going to win? Blah, blah, blah. And Shawn Michaels is out there to say who he thinks is going to win. Undertaker not happy with his pick. And we get a face-off in the ring. And up until they started talking about Shawn Michaels' retirement and Shawn Michaels saying that I stayed away when I could have been making millions of dollars and I could have stepped back in this ring out of respect for you and this business. Up until that point, I was like, you don't got me. This is fan baiting. This is nonsense. I don't care. But the angle between these two was well written, was true to history, and was a really, really great interaction if they were setting up a match between these two. But that's not what they were setting up. This was all over the place, in my opinion. It actually ended up, in my opinion, being a really interesting and well-done segment that will lead nowhere, but still interesting and fun to watch. I mean, what do you think about this?
Initial reaction was, get the fuck off my TV. I don't care. I've been very, very animated about nostalgia for the sake of nostalgia. I've talked about this match, this Undertaker and Triple H in Melbourne for no reason whatsoever. Then you're just going to throw Tripp's buddy out there as well to try to get more buys on the network. And then, yeah, you go into him talking about his retirement and why he did it and why he stayed away. And it does make it interesting, but is it just bait and switch? Are we meant to think that maybe Shawn will come out of retirement and do something in the near future? Maybe not necessarily at this card, but I've seen people talking about, maybe a Triple H and Shawn Michaels tag team match against Taker and someone. Probably Kane. And I get how that's somewhat interesting, but I don't care. I'm sorry. I love Shawn Michaels and Undertaker and Triple H for all that they've done for this industry, but it's time for the other people. It's time to give time, TV time, to the next generation of folks, and I don't know how much longer I can just keep on saying this and try to come up with something different.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. Listen, if they were going to set up Shawn Michaels and Undertaker again, I don't think the match would be any good.
Honestly. Probably not.
But the build-up and the story around it at least would be really interesting. So I might be able to buy into that more than I am with Triple H and Undertaker right now, which is just basically booked because they could.
Yeah. Right?
So there's at least it exposed the fact that the Triple H and Undertaker match means nothing, and that the real interesting thing was in the ring on Monday night, which we're not going to get a follow up to. So that was my thoughts on it. But I loved seeing a feud that was from that had stakes. These guys arguing about something that was real, that had history behind it. I miss that. I want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
The next match had nothing behind it that mattered whatsoever. It was just yet another Bayley and Sasha tag team match that's going nowhere. And they hug a lot because they're best friends. Yay, everyone's happy. And for some reason, Dana Brooke and Ember Moon are tagging together. And even though Ember Moon was just tagging with Alexa or with Bayley and Sasha 2 weeks before that, who cares? This is going nowhere. But the big revelation here is that Dana Brooke has walked out on Titus Worldwide. Could anyone give a shit about that? You have to make us care about people before you make us care about them splitting up. And they tease this for a week. Professional wrestling fans get kind of lambasted because we get mad they don't put enough care into the undercard and they don't write them well and they don't put enough forethought into it. And then when they do something stupid like this, we hear, well, you don't care about the undercard, so why would we write it? No, it's not a chicken or the egg scenario. Write it well, feature the people, make them matter, make us care, and then we'll respond. It doesn't work the other way around. You can't just put something on TV and expect people to care about it. That's not the way it works.
Yeah. And by the way, you did not give me a chance to reply to does anyone care about this when you asked about Dana Brooke leaving Titus Worldwide.
Could you respond, please?
Yes. Not even the crickets care. I mean, you hit the nail on the head of our argument for usage of the undercard responsibly and logically. That if that is all that this match was to do, then that was terrible.
Yeah, it didn't matter. This just doesn't fucking matter. Has Bobby Lashley upset someone behind the scenes already? There could be no other explanation for why every single thing he has written to do is garbage. Every promo, every interaction, whether it be with Sami Zayn or Elias or Jinder Mahal, is just the worst brand of cheesy hack pointless writing. The segment that they put together with Jinder Mahal was less than nothing, and it was saved by a returning Kevin Owens who beat down Bobby Lashley, and I want to be happy about that because I like Kevin Owens and I like him beating up Bobby Lashley to end a terrible segment. But Kevin Owens just quit last week. Can't you keep him away for 2 weeks? Can't you keep him away for a month? Can't you let a storyline develop for crying out loud? This reminds me of back in the day when CM Punk quit for a week and a half.
Yeah.
I mean,
John Cena was fired for a week.
Yeah. Let a storyline develop. Let us forget about something. Let it have some impact. But no, Kevin Owens cuts an in-ring promo a week ago. It's passionate. It's well done. He quits WWE, and he shows up to beat up Bobby Lashley the very next week. And also led the charge against the Shield in the last segment. So what did it actually accomplish? Nothing. If that's what you're going to do, don't write him to quit. I don't get it.
It's like they like to work in fast forward sometimes, because after his quitting last week, he opened back up a Pro Wrestling Tees website under his real name. It was like, oh, okay, they're letting him do this to plant some seeds and of him potentially really quitting. And yeah, and then you bring him back the very next week. Like, that, it's what happened to everything in between?
Patience is needed for really great storytelling. Patience is needed. They have such ADD in the WWE for content that they can't ever provide patience, which means we never get great stories.
They have patience for Roman Reigns. That's about it.
They have eternal patience for Roman Reigns. I think that's a good point. The main event for the evening was Braun Strowman dispatching Finn Balor. Of course, we get the Shield coming back. Now, the Shield were released on their own recognizance. They were charged, but then they stole a police van? That doesn't seem to be smart, because if you're going to be arrested and then released and then you steal a police van, that's another crime. Don't do that, kids. Not a good idea. I'm pretty sure they could have taken an Uber back. I don't think they needed to steal a car. They have it in every city now. But the whole heel locker room came out to beat down the Shield, and we actually got them kind of beaten up, and even Seth got bloodied by smashing into the window of said police van. I guess it was a good storyline development to see the Shield taken out and kind of dominated, because it's not something we've seen a lot in the past. But overall, this seemed pretty paint by numbers and pretty uninteresting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with, like you said, with the Shield being kind of humanized and being knocked down a few pegs. I'm sure that next week they'll have their return and they'll come up against someone and beat them down. But who knows? If you can show them outnumbered for a few weeks and make it really seem like their backs are the ones up against the wall, it might work a little better.
And to the credit of the WWE, and we need to give credit where credit's due, Braun Strowman, he got booed. He was not being cheered as they were beating up the Shield guys. And it seems like their experiment with doing this is so far working, at least in some way, shape, or fashion. So they made a bet that seems to be paying off, at least for now. But yeah, I feel a little bad for Finn Balor. Who is Finn Balor? Is he a guy that is matters, or is he a guy that you throw into the main event as an afterthought? Is he a guy who's beating up Baron Corbin and handily as the Demon and maybe going to go on to bigger and better things, or a guy that walks in and smiles like a goof in the middle of in the 9 o'clock hour of Raw? Right now, he's that guy. He's the goof. He's just an extra body. And I just think it's a shame that he was the one that goes out there to eat a pin from Braun Strowman for no reason.
Yeah. Who is Finn Balor? Sounds like beat poetry that Finn would do at open mic night.
Who is Finn, really?
Yeah. But yeah, it's really a shame to see that, because then it really does make the usage of the Demon pointless then. That it was all just for a show and for nothing other than that, just to give Finn a big entrance at SummerSlam.
Yeah, you'd like to just see him working towards something, not just being an ancillary character.
Yeah.
But we can always dream.
Yes, and we will always be dreamers. But that did it for Raw. Moving into SmackDown Live. I almost wanted to stop watching immediately once Brie Mode kicked off the entire show. Luckily, it didn't last very long, and Brian's music hit. We got Renee partially interviewing them before, like every other in-ring interview, they just take the microphones and they do it themselves. And Miz and Maryse were in a pre-recorded segment in a with an in-ring promo challenging them when they knew that they weren't there. The theme throughout the night was kind of Miz and Maryse half-heartedly or even not heartedly looking for Brie and Brian, while Brian and Brie, of course, looking to get in a fight with Miz and Maryse. They weren't there, so out come Cien and Vega to have a rematch of last week, Brian versus Andrade. And what a lovely, lovely match.
Yeah, this was a good match.
I really enjoyed it. They had very good chemistry in the ring with one another. This is a program that I would love to see if they could write something good between the two of them in the future. Brian gets the win, and this leads to the next step of they're trying to get their hands on one another. Miz and Maryse are at a restaurant, and Brian and Brie are on their way to the restaurant. To be continued.
I want to know, is Brie a property of Raw or SmackDown? Because whoever she's a property of, because remember, Raw and SmackDown are in this bitter war.
You know, yes.
They're always fighting.
Always. And, for and ratings.
They're fighting for ratings, even though they're on different nights. And in November, we're going to have to hear this again. You know we are. But for some reason, Brie can move back.
In October, we will.
Why is that?
To build up towards November.
Oh, yes, you're right. Exactly, exactly. I'm sorry. How foolish of me. But for some reason, Brie can go back and forth between both shows, no problem.
Yeah. Maybe she's a free agent, just like John Cena.
Yeah. If there's one person that I don't want to see on both shows, it's Brie effing Bella.
That is like the worst free agent of all time. Like... that gets to do, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a terrible sports free agent who, and just assuming he can just go and play for the Bulls back in the 90s, but I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. But, yeah, of all the people who could be on both shows, like, you would think it would be someone who could actually get ratings on the other shows, like Braun or Roman or Seth, someone like that, Rhonda. Nope, Brie.
Brie Bella.
Brie Bella. We had a little split screen interview between Becky and Charlotte, who were kept in separate rooms because they couldn't be together because they would brawl. I kind of dug this. I have always been a fan of that type of interview, especially when it doesn't turn into one of them ending up in the other's room, which seems to happen 95% of the time they do that.
Yeah, man, heel Becky Lynch is really good, man.
Yeah.
Becky Lynch is freaking solid as a rock.
Are they trying to be tweener with her, or are they trying to be full out heel with her?
I mean, I can't see any other way. I mean, she is playing a heel character. She's getting cheered like crazy because the fans love her. Because
I've heard that WWE is going to embrace the tweener thing, but this didn't really show it to me.
I mean, the fact is that Becky Lynch was effortlessly cool in this promo and came off as kind of a badass. But they cannot write baby faces because Charlotte could have embraced all of this. This is what I don't understand. They like to ignore the crowd reaction when sometimes embracing it is the exact right thing to do. Charlotte could have said, you know, it originally pissed me off when Becky Lynch punched me in the mouth and the fans cheered. But I understand it Becky Lynch is a hell of a competitor. Becky Lynch has busted her ass for blah, 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 blah for this long, and she deserves her time in the spotlight. She deserves her chance, and I would have given it to her if she all she had to do was ask me. But she had to take the low road. She had to, you know, she had to take a cheap shot, and that's exactly who Becky Lynch is now. She's a, you know, she's a coward. That's a promo that acknowledges the fans but shows them the truth of the situation, and Becky could, you know, play off of that. But instead, they just have Charlotte cut a pretty shitty promo next to Becky being effortlessly cool and badass. Who are the people going to cheer? They're going to cheer Becky. They mm-hmm. they've not learned how to... Baby faces are all sound alike. They're all generic and they're all boring. And a lot of the times, heels like Kevin Owens, heels like Samoa Joe, heels like Braun Strowman when he was still a heel before he turned babyface and heel again, heels like The Miz are just more engaging and more interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember who, it's probably been a number of older wrestlers who say, the babyface is whoever the fans cheer for. That's true to a certain standpoint, but you need to write them that way. You can't just write a person to be a bad guy, and then when they get cheered, be like, oh, well, they're the babyface in the fans' mind. Like then you're not good at writing babyfaces. If your heels are getting cheered that way, then you're good at writing those the babyfaces that the fans want, but you refuse to call them babyfaces. It's...
There are plenty of heels that are interesting and engaging and you want to watch them, but they're people you want to boo. Mm-hmm. And when you have NXT doing this so well, when you have New Japan Pro Wrestling doing this so well, do not tell me that today's fan doesn't like that. Bull fucking shit. That is a cop-out by people that are not creative enough to write interesting characters, because every great television show, and there's about 10,000 on TV right now, can do it. I think you could too.
Yeah, I mean, Ciampa's the perfect example.
Oh yeah.
So the next segment contained a match, but the main purpose of this segment was to reintroduce Asuka after some time off. For just they had nothing for her. She came out to save Naomi from Peyton and Billy. I'm don't get me wrong, I'm happy to see Asuka back on TV, because Asuka on TV is better than Asuka not on TV. But in a mid-card tag feud?
And are we to believe that her and Naomi are best friends?
Yeah, like every female tag team, they're best friends.
Yeah, is she just doing it because it's the right thing to do? Tell me this story, and please don't tell me it's because they have been training partners. I don't want to hear that.
They probably will.
That will just be nonsense. I'm happy to see Asuka back on TV. I'm happy to see maybe Billie Kay and Peyton Royce and something, as well as Naomi, but. Give me a reason. Think about it 5 minutes before you do it and tell me a story. I want to know a story.
Yeah, and you know, Peyton and Asuka have shown some chemistry together in NXT.
Sure.
So we could have some good matches between the two of them. But yeah, you're already starting behind the eight ball here. And I'm not saying that this is dead on arrival, but you got some work to do, WWE, to make this make sense.
For sure.
Miz and Maryse show back up, but Paige tells Miz that he has a match for later on, and that's against whoever wants to fight him. And the person who ends up wanting to fight Miz is R-Truth, because Truth thinks that Maryse is Carmella. And then once he realizes that she's not Carmella, he still thinks that she's Carmella, but Carmella number two, and gets Carmella to be in his corner. They create a truce. Also, by the way, they were then announced to be teammates for the next mixed match challenge.
Yes.
Well, that escalated quickly.
That's convenient.
But R-Truth, Miz, you know, I have a hard time disliking things that R-Truth does in at this point of his career because they make me giggle. Like,
I am unapologetic. I thought this was fucking hilarious. I've enjoyed every part of R-Truth thinking that somehow if he fights Carmella, he gets a title shot. And he plays it perfectly. I know it doesn't go anywhere and doesn't mean anything, but I enjoy it. It's entertaining to me. And all of this was pretty entertaining to me. Even the stuff later on with him and Ty Dillinger talking and, you know, R-Truth almost seeming like he was actually smarter than everybody else because he got himself into the main event when we just think he's crazy. Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's fun. You know, this is where comedy can work in wrestling. You don't always have to have so much of it pushed on you. A little bit can go a long way. Joe's promo. We had the little swerve here with AJ. We believe that AJ was at home. Well, I mean, there was a few swerves here. Joe said he was going to go to AJ's house, but Joe shows up on the show because Joe then thinks that AJ is staying at his house to prevent Joe from being at his house. But anyway, both of them are actually there. AJ and Joe fight. AJ beats Joe up pretty bad. And then we get him being held back by Paige and referees. I'm glad that we didn't get that, like, AJ breaks through and then it goes further. The look on Joe's face, too, after all of this, it didn't look like he was mad. It kind of looked like he was happy about what happened there. And...
Well, he's been pushing the buttons, and that's been his whole character here.
Yeah, he caused AJ to snap of sorts.
Yeah, this continues to be well done, and Samoa Joe continues to be money on the mic, and I just really want... I think the last great match we saw with AJ may have been with Roman. Or no, probably Finn Balor, the kind of match that was just thrown together last minute on the pay-per-view when everyone had freaking mono or whatever it was. Yeah. And that was probably the last really great AJ match, but the last really great feud was probably Roman. It was a while ago. So I just really want to see these two guys deliver the freaking goods. And we got a good taste on the last pay-per-view, but I want to see these guys go at it.
Yeah. It was a nice tease as to what they can do. Yeah, let's see where it goes. We got a triple threat tag team match to determine the other half of the number one contendership match for the tag team titles. Usos, Sanity, and Rusev Day. Rusev Day goes over here. So they're going to be facing the Bar next week to determine who will face the New Day. I really enjoy seeing this, but, you know, I'm not getting my hopes up all that much here because Rusev and Rusev Day have been getting opportunities, but they just don't end up turning into what we ultimately would like to see, and that's some gold around Rusev's waist. It's been a long time since we've seen that.
Yeah, I agree, and you feel like it's a heel babyface dynamic, and maybe this really says that Rusev Day, they're actually going to embrace themselves as babyfaces here, but you feel like the Bar's probably going to go over in this situation against the New Day. But it's always a positive when we're getting matches where the winner gets something, where the matches mean something.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last 2 weeks, these tag matches meant something, so that's great. That's what we should be getting. There is a minor down here in the fact that Sanity? What has Sanity done? They are as irrelevant as the AOP on Raw. They're just there. They're
all about chaos and taking over. What, taking over by losing every match that they're involved in? Taking over by changing Killian Dane's gear? I don't know what they're...
I hate that singlet.
I don't know what they're taking over. I don't know why they called them up. I don't know why they're on the main roster if you had nothing for them other than what they've so far done.
Yeah, it's a crying shame, especially with the talent there. They're probably on their way to being the Ascension.
It seems like it. Maybe Vince just doesn't like Juggalos.
But really, who does? But Juggalos are people too. I get that.
No. I'm from Detroit. Juggalos are not people.
Main event, Miz, Truth. Finally, Brie and Brian show back up, and Truth gets a quick little roll-up win, and Brian gets his hands on Miz. Brie gets her hands on Maryse, but Almas and Vega out to cut things off, but you know the babyfaces get the upper hand in this particular exchange, allowing Miz and Maryse to escape, not so unscathed, but I don't know where Almas and Vega are going to fit into this in the long run. Are we going to get Brie and Brian tagging against Almas and Vega next week as just more setup for the Miz and Maryse match? And if so, like, is this really helping Almas and Vega after it felt like they were really on the up and up? And maybe WWE sees this as a big deal for them. Hey, you get to be in a program with Brian and Miz. You guys are going to end up being just in between fodder, but hey, you're in that feud.
I think it's probably a factor they didn't really have anything else for them to do. That would be my assumption. I will say this, and I beat up Brie Bella all the time, but she applied the shit out of that fucking yes lock.
Yeah.
I thought she did a hell of a job putting that together, so I was not expecting that. I was like, this is going to be a train wreck, but she did a great job. So.
And I feel like she has done that well before, yeah. Because I felt like now she needs to teach her brother-in-law how to properly apply a crossface.
Well, not her brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah, I cannot get behind Brie Bella, excuse me, and Maryse being a part of this feud. These are two guys, I want them to tear their heads off each other, and now we have their wives involved, and I don't understand what the point of this is. I think it's pointless. I think it is a waste of time and a waste of really, really great talent because neither Maryse nor Brie Bella can wrestle. And they're not adding anything to this feud. They're detracting from it, in my opinion.
Yeah. They absolutely are. They took the feud that I wanted to see the most and did a great job through the first portion of it. And then just like, hey, here are these other people that you don't really want, but we're going to make you have them.
Yeah. Just a shame.
Yeah, it is. Hopefully after this segment, like, after Hell in a Cell, the women are then erased from the remainder of this feud, and we get a true just one-on-one feud building up to probably a last match between the two of them for like Survivor Series.
Yeah, and I want to just kind of make sure that it's understood. It's not the fact that the women aren't valuable or they're just ancillary and the women always have to be in the background or anything like that. You have a feud between two guys that want to tear each other's heads off. Adding anyone in this match is not going to make a lot of sense. Adding any extra characters doesn't make any sense. Adding any characters that really are not good professional wrestlers and can't add to the in-ring story narrative doesn't make a lot of sense. adding characters that cannot fight between each other, because we're not going to see Miz beat up Brie Bella or Daniel Bryan beat up Maryse. That doesn't make any sense. So that's what I want to make sure it's understood. It's not the fact that, you know, the women can't be involved, or the women are you know, that's the bad part about it.
Yes,
it's the storyline, and it's the basic setup of a mixed tag match that to me doesn't do anything for me almost ever. If you want to do a mixed tag match and you actually have women involved that can go toe to toe and can wrestle with the guys, by the way, there's plenty of women. I put Asuka in the ring with a hell of a lot of male roster members, and I'd love to see that. I put Ronda Rousey in there. I put Charlotte Flair in there. If they at WWE ever went in that route, which I know some independents have, I'd be all for that. But that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely true. I don't feel like I need to add on to that. That nail on the head.
Okay.
All right. So that's SmackDown. Anything else? Like, have you watched any of All In? I have not.
I have not. I've read a good amount about it, and it seemed like a great show. It had great responses to it. I heard nothing but positive and glowing reviews about the show, and I'd like to watch it at some point, but the odds of that happening are very low.
Yeah, I'm gonna between moving and so many other things, I'm gonna try to find some time here and there to maybe watch a couple matches and see those, probably the more talked about matches. But awesome job all around from everyone involved in that to prove people wrong that said that an indie show could never do a 10,000 seat arena. And congratulations to Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, and everyone involved in All In for proving those people wrong. And hopefully it's something that they can do every once in a while and create this like kind of indie super show that can get people in the wrestling world talking, like not just indie wrestling fans, but WWE fans, even WWE wrestlers, like glowing reviews from people like Daniel Bryan and The Rock and John Cena. And like, it's great to see that the people who are involved with the sometimes thought of evil company are knowing where their roots are at, and that this is professional wrestling and enjoying to watch professional wrestling.
Agreed.
But other than that, I don't think we have really anything else, Kevin.
I do not, sir.
All right. Well, thanks everyone once again for joining us. Thanks for putting up with us taking a week off. It was well needed for us to spend some time with family, friends, and just get a little bit of a break from this crazy world of wrestling. Make sure that you follow us on our social media. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Spots. We're live tweeting along to Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and the pay-per-views. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, or simply MissSpots.com. You can also listen to us on any of the major streaming services, such as iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Overcast, Google Podcasts. You can subscribe to this show on any of those services and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday, free of charge. You can also listen to us every Friday night on Geek Life Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. That's geeklifradio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.